This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
In light of Brian Koberger now coming out and saying that he didn't do it and that his family has stood by him this whole time, I think it's time to address his family. And I'm going to try and do this as respectfully as possible because you didn't ask for this. You got thrown into this situation by your broken-brained son, and you've been unfortunately along for the ride thus far. What I want to tell you in as lovingly critical, as in a lovingly critical way as I can, it's okay to let him go. And maybe you already have in some ways, but in others you haven't, because we saw the receipts. I see the receipts. I saw the receipt of you putting mom $150 in Brian's commissary account every damn week. Helping little Brian get his snacks. You need to stop doing that. You don't need to keep feeding the monster. Your son did this. Why are you still supporting him? It's not healthy for you. It's not healthy for him. It's not healthy for anybody. There's no way of working through this where this is the best route of continued existence, standing by your little boy no matter what. No, it's not. It's not. And we're going to talk about this. And I wrote this. This is just kind of an open letter. And like I said, I want to deliver this respectfully. But I got to say, in reality, seeing that receipt and seeing your name, Mary, next to $150 that you're dropping into his commissary account on a weekly basis is a little sickening, considering we know what your son did and that you still have the gall to stand behind him, even if it is just to buy him ramen and Snickers. There is a time for letting go of anything and everyone and everything, depending on what they do and how they do it. And I got to say, Lil Bryce checked every damn box. Why you're still there supporting him might be part of the reason why Brian became the monster he did. It's time to change course. You were right about him once. That matters. And nobody gets to take that from you. In 2020, the word your family used was proud. Melissa said it out loud to the Times, and she meant it. Brian had come through the other side of something terrible, and your family had pulled him there. By your very own hands, helped him get through it. Two parents, two sisters, years of work, money spent, love pointed in every direction available, rehab, boxing, running, community college first, then a bachelor's degree, then a master's, then a doctoral program, 1,300 miles from home in Washington State. You earned that word, honestly. This letter isn't here to tell you that you were wrong. You weren't. Not about the addiction, not about the work he'd put in, not about the young man standing in front of you at that particular point in his life. Everything you saw was real, and everything you did mattered. It just never reached what was ever underneath. Because nothing anyone has ever done has gotten near that. Mrs. Koberger, you got on a plane to Boise and sat in a courtroom while four families stood up and said out loud what your son did to their children, every word of it, with you right there in the gallery. That's not a small thing to survive. Most people couldn't, and nobody should have to. Amanda, you were there too. You sat through it with her. Melissa, you stayed on the East Coast because your father was having heart trouble, and the fact that you had planned to be there says everything about the kind of family you are. Then Judge Hippler handed down four consecutive life terms plus 10 years, and it was over. Your son stood up and walked out past his mother without even looking at her. He didn't say anything. He didn't turn his head. That was the last thing he did in that room. And the last thing you got from him in it was the back of his head going through a door. You already knew what he was capable of doing to the people closest to him. Not the worst of it, but the shape of it. Let's go back to February 8th of 2014. Brian was 19, a few days out of a rehab center back home in Pennsylvania. He took Melissa's phone. Roughly $400 is what it cost at that point in time. He paid a friend $20 to drive him to a mall and sold it to an automated kiosk for $200. Run the numbers on that because you lived them. He destroyed $400 of his sister's property to put $180 in his own pocket. That's not a scheme. And it isn't clever. It's somebody who ran the math on what it cost her and decided the numbers didn't matter. It only mattered what mattered to him, that he got something out of it. Your husband found out and your husband called the police on his own son. Misdemeanor theft. Brian served no time because Monroe County runs a diversion program that erases the first charge once probation's finished. And that's where the case went. Police later confirmed the record no longer exists. The system itself gave him a clean slate. You did what a lot of parents wouldn't do, turn your kid in. And good on you for that. I want you to think about what that decision actually required because you were there for it. Somebody in your house had to pick up a phone. Somebody had to give a police officer the name of their own kid out loud, knowing what it starts. Then everybody in that house had to keep living while it played out. There's one line of that police report that reads differently now than it did then. When his father confronted him about the phone, Brian told him not to do anything stupid. 19 years old, days out of rehab, sleeping in his father's house, eating his father's food, wearing clothes his father paid for. And the instinct wasn't shame. It wasn't apology. And it wasn't an offer to fix it. It was a warning aimed at the man who took him back in. And then your family fixed him anyway. You reported it. And then you went to work, all of you, and it worked. That's not a punchline. The addiction actually went away. What came out the other side was a functioning adult somewhat with 2 degrees and a doctoral program ahead of him. By every measure available to your family at the time, you had won. You took a 19-year-old selling a stolen phone at a mall kiosk and turned him into a graduate student. You should know that what you did during those years is one of the most remarkable things a family can do. The fact that it wasn't enough doesn't make it small. It makes it tragic. And none of it was your fault. So look at what's come back at you since. Where Brian was held in jail, you were on video calls with him for hours at a time, every day, hours of your life on a screen, day after day, for months on end. Nobody ordered that. No court required it. You did it because he is your son and he is in a cell and you could not stop being his mother just because of what put him there. Or could you? Maybe you should have. Maybe there is, or there shouldn't be, an unconditional love when people do that level of heinous crime. I can't say. I'm not in your shoes. I don't know exactly how I would handle something like that. I like to think I know, but I'm not you, and I've never been confronted with the madness that you have to confront every day that you open your eyes. Melissa, you kept annual reminders in your calendar for each of the four victims' birthdays. You told the Times your mother prays every day for those families. You left a job because your employer got buried in inquiries about the name. You also said that if you'd ever had a reason to believe your brother did this, you'd have turned him in yourself. Good on you. And on his most recent birthday behind bars, Brian asked you to bake a cake to his eldest sister's taste and to have her blow out the candles, a birthday request routed home from prison in Ohio with instructions attached. He's in a cell. He's asking you to do things, specific things designed to his specifications on his timeline, even from behind reinforced glass. He's still issuing directions, and you are asked to follow them. None of that brought you a phone call before he blew it all up again. Because on July 27th of 2026, Brian filed a handwritten petition for post-conviction relief in Ada County District Court. He's representing himself. He's alleging he was coerced, that false promises were made, that exculpatory evidence was withheld, and he was convicted. And convinced to falsely confess. He calls the state account of the murders work of fiction. That petition names Ann Taylor, Elizabeth Massoff, and Bika Barlow, court-appointed attorneys, who spent more than 2 years on his case and kept him off Idaho's death row. By any standard you want to use, that is the most valuable thing anyone has ever done for your son. They finished doing it, and he put their names in a court document and called their work ineffective. He also didn't tell you first. He called a newspaper. A reporter at the New York Times knew before the woman who sat through those impact statements did. Your family found out the way strangers did, off a headline on a Monday. Let's be precise about what that petition produces for him at minimum, no matter how a judge eventually rules on it. A hearing? A ride out of his cell, a room with other people in it, a camera, probably several of them, if it goes that far. He's a man in maximum security south of Boise in a building where the days are engineered to be identical. And he found one lever still connected to anything outside those walls, and he pulled it. He's also asking the court to appoint him a new attorney. The claim is that his lawyers ruined him. And the remedy he's requesting is another lawyer paid for by the same state of Idaho he says manufactured the case against him. Set that next to a stolen phone in 2014 and a warning not to do anything stupid. 11 years apart, and the reflex is identical. Whoever's standing closest to him is a lever, and levers get pulled. I know what you'd say to all of this. Some of you are already saying it. He's your son. He's your brother. That's not a position you adopted. It's a fact. And facts like that don't come with an exit clause. They are parents and siblings. And there are parents and siblings all over the world right now dealing with someone who's put them through hell. And every one of them already knows the answer. You don't quit on your child. You don't quit on your brother. And look, the instinct is decent. It is right 9 out of 10 times, and a world without it would be a worse place to live in. So I'm not telling you to stop loving him, although maybe I am. Nobody hands down that instruction from the outside, but maybe more people should. But the reality is, I'm not in your chair. I haven't been for a single day. So I cannot honestly say how you feel. But here's what I'm asking you to consider. And it's narrower than that, and it's harder. That instinct you're following assumes there's somebody still in there for the love to reach. It assumes the door you're holding open leads somewhere other than just consumption of whatever goodness you have. No one on the outside looks at that and goes, oh, good parents, good sisters. And it doesn't matter. I know you're not doing that for the outside world. You're probably doing it for yourself, and you're doing it for the person that you hope Brian is. It assumes the person on the other side of it can be gotten to if you just keep the light on long enough and don't give up first. Your family already ran that test. You ran it under the best conditions anybody could have asked for. Two parents, two sisters, money spent, years given, a 19-year-old put back together piece by piece by people who wanted it to work more than they wanted anything in their lives. And what came back through that door was a man with 2 degrees who did what was done in Moscow, Idaho, who admitted it under oath, who then filed a document blaming his lawyers for it and called a reporter before he called his mother. Melissa, you already said the truest sentence anyone connected to this case has said out loud. You told the Times, it's confusing, it's painful, it's like being victimized but not really being a victim. That's not a woman asking permission to keep loving her brother. That's a woman describing what it costs her to do it. And that price is real. So I want to say plainly what letting go would actually look like, because the caricature of it is a cruelty that nobody is proposing. Nobody is asking you to hold a press conference. Nobody's asking for a statement or a denunciation or a performance for the people watching. That's not what this is. Although it probably would help maybe to say out loud publicly so he can see it too, that you're done, that there's no more feeding the beast of the baby you probably wish you would have aborted. It's quieter than that. It's not taking the call. It's not making the drive. It's a birthday that goes by without a cake baked to anyone's specifications. It's the 4 of you deciding that whatever you owed, you've paid, and the account is closed. It means accepting that the person you rebuilt is not the person who filed that petition from a prison cell, and that no amount of holding on will turn him into the man you thought you'd made. No more deposits in his commissary. Letting go doesn't cost your family its decency. It doesn't erase those 11 years of work. It doesn't take back the word proud. You earned it. It's yours. Grief over a person who's still breathing is still grief, and setting it down is not the same thing as pretending it never happened. What it cost him is an audience. And that is the only currency Brian has ever actually spent. Madison Mogan was 21 years old. Kaylee Gonzalez was 21. Zanna Kernodle, 20. Ethan Chapin was 20. Their families never got a choice about any of this. Not one piece of it. Not one day of it. Not then and not now. They will carry those names for the rest of their lives, and nothing will ever make that weight lighter. So tell me how it makes sense that you open up your checkbook and give your little boy $150 every week so he can get snacks after he butchered all 4 of those children. And you're giving him snack time? I'm sorry, someone needs to say it. It's not right. You need to stop. You have a choice here. Those families have no choice of what they can do or not do with their children. Their children are gone because of yours. And every week you're still making the choice to fill his bowl with food like an injured stray dog in the wild that keeps coming back with rabies and biting the people in the neighborhood, killing them. And what you're doing is like, come here, boy. Let's keep you going. So you can do more. At some point, there is a level of responsibility that falls onto you. Enabling, validating, giving breath and life to the monster that is Brian Koberger. It's up to you how history remembers you. For who you are, what you've accomplished in your life outside of Brian Koberger, the victim of being the parent of Brian Koberger, or the continued enabler of Brian Koberger to your dying day. It's your choice how you want to be remembered. Choose wisely. your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. We'll continue it right there. I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.